NatuLife, registered trademark. I know, things taste better fresh, not packaged. They say hamburger clogs your arteries and hurts the rainforests. We should eat like our Stone Age ancestors who dug roots, got plenty of exercise, and always stayed a little hungry. So they say. Still, I balked when my wife served me termites. Come on, honey, try one. They're delicious. Gaia had the hive uncrated and warmed up by the time I got home. Putting down my briefcase, I stared at hundreds of the pasty-scaled critters scrabbling under a plastic cover, tending their fat queen, devouring kitchen trimmings, making themselves right at home in my home. Gaia offered me a probe made of fine-grained pseudo-wood. See? You use this stick to fish after some nice plump ones, just like chimpanzees do in the wild. I gaped at the insect habitat, filling the last free space between our veggie hydrator and the meat sublimate racks. But we agreed. Our apartment's too small. Oh, sweetheart, I know you'll just love them. Anyway, don't I need protein and vitamins for the baby? She put my hand over her swelling belly, which normally softened any objections. Only this time my own stomach was in rebellion. I thought you already got all that stuff from the yeast beast machine. I pointed to the vat occupying half of our guest bathroom, venting nutritious vapors from racks of tissue-grown cutlets. That stuff's not natural, Gaia complained with a moo. Come on, try the real thing. It's just like they show on the NatuLife channel. I don't think... Watch, I'll show you. Gaia's tongue popped out as she concentrated, quivering with excitement from her red ponytail down to her rounded belly as she passed the stick probe through a sealed hatch to delve after six-legged prey. Got one, she cried, drawing a twitching insect to her lips. You're not seriously... My throat stopped as the termite vanished head first. Bliss crossed Gaia's face. Mmm, crunchy, she smacked, revealing two legs and a twitching tail. I found enough manly dignity to raggedly chastise her. Don't talk with your mouth full. Turning away, I added, if you need me, I'll be in my workout room. Gaia had rearranged our sleep quarters again. Now the cramped chamber merged seamlessly with a tropic paradise, including raucous bird calls and mist from a roaring waterfall. The impressive effects made it hard to navigate past the bed, so I ordered the hologram blanked. Silence fell as the vid wall turned gray, leaving just the real-life portion of her pocket jungle to contend with, a tangle of potted plants warranted to give off purer oxygen than a pregnant woman could sniff from bottles. Wading through creepers and mutant ficuses, I finally found the moss-lined laundry hamper and threw in my work clothes. The fragrant clean-you lichen had already sani-scavenged and folded my exercise togs, which felt warm and skin supple when I drew them on. The organo-electric garment rippled across my skin as if alive, seeming just as eager for a workout as I was. I'd been through hell at the office. Traffic was miserable, and the smog index had been redlining all week. Termites were only the last straw. Let's go, I muttered. I haven't killed anything in a week. Longstick spotted a big old buck gazelle. It limps, my hunting partner said, rising from his haunches to point across 100 yards of dry savanna. Earlier, it met a lion. I rose from my stretching exercises to peer past a screen of sheltering boulders, following Longstick's gnarly arm. One animal stood apart from the herd. Sniffing an unsteady breeze, the buck turned to show livid claw marks along one flank. Clearly, this prey was a pushover compared to last Sunday's pissed-off rhino. The virtual reality machine must have sensed I'd had a rough day. My hand stroked the spear, tracing its familiar nicks and knots, an illusion of raw archetypal power. The beaters are ready, Chief, I nodded. Let's get on with it. Longstick pursed his lips and mimicked the call of a beecatcher. Moments later, the animal snorted as a shift in the heavy air brought insinuations of human scent. Another 100 yards beyond the herd, where the sparse pampas faded into a hazy stand of acacia trees, I glimpsed the rest of our hunting party creeping forward. My hunters. My tribe. I was tempted to reach up and adjust the virtual reality helmet, which fed this artificial world to my eyes and ears, to zoom in on those distant human images. Alas, except for Longstick, I had never met any of the other hunters up close. Good persona programs aren't cheap, and with a baby coming, there were other things for Gaia and me to spend money on. Yeah, like a crummy termite hive. Resentment fed on surging adrenaline. Never trust a gatherer. That was the hunter's creed. Love them, protect them, die for them, but always remember, their priorities are different. The beaters stood as one, shouting. The gazelles reared, wheeling the other way. Longstick hissed. Here they come! The AccuTerrain floor thrummed beneath my feet to the charge of 100 hooves. Sense you surround earphones brought the stampede roar of panicky beasts thundering toward us, wild-eyed with ardor to survive. Clutching my spear in sweaty palms, I crouched as graceful animals vaulted overhead, rib cages heaving. Meanwhile, a faint subsonic mantra recited, I am part of nature, one with nature. The young and breeding females we let flash by without harm, but then, trailing, and already foaming with fatigue, came the old buck, its leap leaden, unsteady, and I knew the program really was taking it easy on me today. Longstick howled. I sprinted from cover, swiftly taking the lead. The auto treadmill's bumps and gullies matched whatever terrain the goggles showed me, so my feet knew how to land and thrust off again. The bodysuit brushed my skin with synthetic wind. Flared nostrils inhaled sweat, exhilaration, and for a time I forgot I was in a tiny room on the 80th floor of a suburban Chi-Town Conapt. I was deep in the past of my forebears, back in a time when men were few and therefore precious, magical, back when nature thrived and included us. Easy workout or no, I got up a good sweat before the beast was cornered against a stand of jagged sawgrass. The panting gazelle's black eye met mine with more than resignation. In it I saw tales of past battles and matings, of countless struggles won and finally lost. I couldn't have felt more sympathy if he'd been real. My throwing arm cranked and I thought, long ago I'd have done this to feed my wife and child. As for here and now, well, this sure beats the hell out of a racquetball. Mass-produced Conapt housing lets 12 billion Earthlings live in minimum decency, at the cost of dwelling all our lives in stacked boxes. No wonder so many await drawings to visit mountains, the seashore, the remaining forests. Between times, virtual reality keeps us sane within our high-rise caves. On my way to shower after working out, I saw that Gaia's private VR room was in use. Impulsively, I tiptoed into the closet next door, feeling for the crack between stacked room units and pressed my eye close. Gaia squatted on her treadmill floor, shaped to mimic a patch of uneven ground. Her bodysuit fit her pregnant form like a second skin, while helmet and goggles made her resemble some bug or star alien. But I knew her scenario, like mine, lay in the distant past. She made digging motions with a phantom tool, invisible to me, held in her cupped hands, then reached down to pluck another ghost item, her gloves simulating touch to match whatever root or tuber she saw through the goggles. Gaia pantomimed brushing dirt away from her find, then dropping it into a bag at her side. Sometimes, eavesdropping like this, I'd feel a chill wondering how odd I must look during workouts, leaping about, brandishing invisible spears, and shouting at my hunters. No wonder most people keep VR so private, even from their spouses. Gaia tilted her head as if listening to somebody, then laughed aloud. I know, didn't the two of them look funny, coming home all proud with that skinny little squirrel on a stick? Such great hunters. That didn't stop them from gobbling half our carrots. Naturally, I could not see or hear Gaia's companions, presumably other women gatherers in her own simulated tribe, which she had been visiting since before we ever met. She stopped again, listening, then turned around. It's your baby flower. That's okay, I'll take care of him, she laughed. I need the practice. A warm feeling spread as I watched her gently pick up an invisible child. Her bodysuit tugged and contracted, mimicking a wriggly weight in her arms. Awkwardly, but with clear enjoyment, Gaia cooed at an infant who dwelled only in a world of software and in her mind. I crept away to take a shower, at once ashamed of spying and glad that I had. We had met at a campus Earth Day festival soon after the price of full bodysuits fell to a level students could afford. By then, she and I each had our own Pleistocene worlds, the same ones we maintained 5 years later with upgrades and improvements. If I had known on that day of our shared interest in the simulated past, it might have made approaching her much easier. As it was, I followed her strolling by booths and exhibits proclaiming this or that planet-saving endeavor, single-mindedly entranced by the graceful way she moved. Since she wore a smog mask and sunglasses against the UV, I couldn't see much of her face, but Gaia laughed a rich contralto, clapping as contestants jousted with padded lances from the backs of flapping sky cycles. When the undefeated champion called in vain for fresh challengers, I stepped forward impulsively, eager to impress her. When I came to later, it was in the air-conditioned first aid tent. An angel cradled my head on her lap, speaking my name. I didn't even recognize her till she laughed at my confusion. "You're okay," she said. "It's just a bump on the head." I recall sagging back, aching and content. It turned out Gaia had already noticed me days before in the library, asked friends about me, and accessed my open postings on the net. As usual, she was one step ahead of me, and I didn't mind a bit. I never had any cause to until the day of the termites. Emerging from a long shower, I found the wall screen in the bedroom had been tuned to Mother Earth Channel 53. A green-robed priestess recited a sermon. "Some radicals say science and nature are foes, that we should get rid of all machines, farms, cities, returning to more natural ways of life." Gaia emerged from her closet wearing a bright cotton shift over her blossoming figure, sorting through a cloth bag slung over one shoulder. "Where are you going?" I tried asking, but the life-size matron on the wall was doubly loud. "As we learn about healthy diets, it seems we should eat like our ancestors, back when meat was caught but twice a week or so, and all other food was gathered by skilled women." I tugged Gaia's elbow, repeating my question. She startled, then smiled at me. "Natu birth class, sweetheart. Lots to learn before I'm ready. Just 2 months left, you know." But I thought, fats and sweets were rare back then, hence our cravings. But now forests topple for cattle ranches and sugar farms, producing far too much of a good I shouted, "Computer, shut off that noise!" Welcome silence fell. The priestess's mouth moved silently while Gaia looked reproving. "You said I might come along next time," I complained. Gaia stroked my face. "Now, dear, we're just going over nest and birthing procedures. You'd only be bored." How could I answer that? My dad used to proudly describe the day I entered the world. He was present the whole time, even cut the cord back when old-fashioned feminism touted sharing all life's duties. Unlike today's femismo, which says there are some things men just aren't meant to take part in. Undaunted, I changed tacks. Snaking arms around Gaia's waist, I drew her close. "Actually, I was hoping this evening." Her laughter was indulgent. "You had a good hunt, yes? I can tell it always leaves you frisky." "In a decent marriage, you learn to read each other." Clearly, it was futile trying to get her in the mood tonight. "We used to have great sex before her pregnancy, and presumably would again." Despite urgent hormones, a grown man learns to be patient. A grown man also has the right to be grumpy now and then. Go to the damn class then, I'll be okay." "Aw, sweetie." She tiptoed to kiss my chin. "Look by the console for a present, something to show I haven't forgotten you." Gaia blew another kiss from the front door and was gone. I wandered to the master house controller and picked up a brightly colored program chip, still tacky where Gaia must have peeled off a discount sticker from the NatuLife store. "Something for the Hunter," the title read, and I snorted. Right. In other words, something to keep the man of the house distracted beating drums with a bunch of make-believe comrades while wife's attention turns to serious matters, nesting and the continuity of life. It might have been meant as a loving gesture, but right then it made me feel superfluous, even more left out than before. Sliding the chip into the console, I accidentally brushed the volume knob, and the booming voice of the priestess returned. Must face the fact that Earth's billions won't accept returning to nature by scratching mud and sleeping on dirt floors. We must learn new ways, both more natural and smarter. I snickered at that. Funny how each generation thinks it knows what smarter means. Longstick greeted me with a sweeping bow, at once sardonic and respectful.
Welcome back, O great chief.
Yeah, I muttered at my simulated sidekick. Okay, I'll bite. What's different this time? Everything seemed less real without my virtuality helmet and bodysuit. Here in the living room, Primeval Forest cut off sharply where the vid wall met the couch. Yet I could have sworn my ersatz companion seemed friendlier, warmer somehow.
The Flintsmiths are ready to show their wares, Chief, Longstick said.
The who? I began, but Longstick had already turned to begin striding down a path. From past adventures in this simulated world, I knew the trail led to a stone-lined gully. The living room had no treadmill floor, so I stood still, watching the image of Longstick's fur-draped back plow past trees and boulders down a series of switchbacks. A rhythmic sound grew steadily louder, a tinny clatter of brittle objects colliding and breaking. Finally, we reached a sandy stream bed where several figures could be seen sitting on logs, hammering stones together. Oh, yes, Flintsmiths. NatuLife stocked countless You Are There programs in all the ancient arts, from bronze casting to automobile design. With our shared interest in the Neolithic, Gaia had cleverly bought a Stone Age simulation the computer could fit right into my private world to help pass an evening while she trained for motherhood. Okay, I sighed, let's get on with it. A youngster with a wispy beard noticed us, stopped hammering and nudged the others, a weathered old man and a sturdy-looking fellow with one leg much shorter than the other. Made sense. Toolmaking was good work for the prehistoric handicapped. The Smiths rose and bowed respectfully. These wouldn't be full-scale sim persona like Longstick, but animated actors in a limited scenario.
We have worked those chert cores you traded from Seacliff Tribe, O Chief, the oldest one said, lisping through gaps in his teeth. Would you like to see?
I shrugged. Why not? He spread a fur and began laying out an assortment of Neolithic cutlery, glinting under simulated sunshine. There were spearheads, axes, burins, and scrapers, plus other tools I couldn't identify offhand, each item the product of at least 100 strokes, skillfully cleaving native rock into shapes useful for daily life. A prehistoric combined kitchen, armory, and machine shop. The Smiths offered to let me feel an edge, but it was disturbing to watch the computer manifest an image of my own hand holding an object I couldn't feel. I resolved to try again later, replaying the scenario with body gloves on. Well, it's been interesting, I said after a while, feeling fatigued, but I think that's enough for now. A high shout broke in. Everyone looked past my shoulder, but the scene remained obstinately riveted until a new figure entered view from the left. Shorter, slimmer than the others, this one strode with a springy elfin gait, clothed in the tunic and leggings of a hunter. The newcomer carried a bundle of slender wooden saplings the right size for fashioning spears. Only when these were dumped with a clatter did I note in surprise that the hunter was female. Ho, Chief, she greeted me, acknowledging Longstick with a nod. My companion leaned over and muttered,
This is Ankle of a Giraffe, daughter of Antler and Pear Blossom. She is one of the beaters in the hunt.
That's what I want to talk to you about. The young Stone Ager said, planting fists on her hips. She was lithe and a trifle lean for my tastes, as well as being smudged from head to toe, but she made eye contact in a bold, provocative way.
I'm sick of just beating, Great Chief.
I want to be in on the kill. I want to learn from you, too. The stonesmiths hissed surprise. Longstick rumbled.
Ankle, you forget yourself.
The girl bowed submissively, yet her eyes held fierce determination. She seemed ready to speak again when I shouted,
Freeze frame!
All action halted, leaving the tribesmen locked in time. A blue jay halted in flight across the gully while I wrestled with confusion. It wasn't the idea of a female hunter. Plenty of tribes had them, according to tradition. But why complicate matters with such a player right now, just as the simulation seemed about to end? What did it have to do with prehistoric tool-making?
Computer, this isn't just a packaged adventure, is it?
No, these are autonomous persona programs operating in your private sim world. So Gaia had been generous after all. Longstick was no longer my only full-scale companion. Core memory has been enhanced to allow up to 5 flexible personae at any one time.
Oh, I get it.
Gaia must have needed more memory for her own programs, the midwives and doulas and other helpers she'd need when the baby came. The expense was already budgeted. No wonder she could afford a few extra playmates for me, thrown in at a discount. After wondering whether to feel hurt, pleased, or amused, I finally decided it didn't matter. Computer, hold simulation for transfer to my rec room. Minutes later, fully suited for virtuality, I held a flint knife in my hands, each curve and serrated edge conveyed by subtle electrochem gloves. The stonesmith seemed pleased by my admiration. It was a good knife of the finest obsidian bound to an ivory handle carved with figures of running horses. Despite not being real, it was the most splendid thing I ever owned. The treadmill worked beneath my feet, mimicking movement as Longstick and I departed the Neolithic factory, heading toward Lookout Point to observe migratory herds of wildebeest and zebra crossing the plain. Along the way, we passed the young beater, Ankle, squatting by the riverbank where she'd been banished by Longstick for impertinence, tying stone points to spear shafts, tightening the leather thongs with her teeth. She looked up as we passed by, unrepentant, a light of challenge in her eyes. I paused, then turned to Longstick.
We could use a scout to carry messages. Next hunt, bring this one along.
My simulated friend returned one of his sharp-eyed looks, but nodded. Ankle turned away, wisely hiding a jubilant grin. Amid these distractions, I emerged from my primeval world to find Gaia already home from her class, nestled in our small, darkened bedroom. I slipped between the sheets quietly, but soon felt her hand upon my thigh.
I've been thinking about you, my wife whispered, her breath warm on my ear.
Pregnancy doesn't mean no sex. Doctors say it's all right if you're careful. In fact, it can be much better than all right. Gaia was very skilled. The buffalo groaned, mired in muddy shallows with 5 spears in its flank. I commanded no more thrown. Ankle protested, waving her javelin.
Why not finish it off?
Because the chief said no, Longstick snapped.
But I gestured for patience. With Ankle for an apprentice, I now appreciated the adage, you never really know something till you teach it.
Think, what happens if he falls where he stands?
She eyed the panting beast.
He'll fall into the rip. Oh, we'd lose half the carcass.
Ankle nodded soberly.
So we try getting him ashore first?
Right, and quickly. We don't want him suffering needlessly.
Several tribesmen made pious gestures in agreement. Through ritual, hunters like these used to appease the spirits of beasts they killed, which made me wonder, would modern folk eat so much meat if they had to placate the ghost of each steer or chicken? My time in a simulated Stone Age hasn't made me a vegetarian, but I better appreciate the fact that meat once lived. Longstick called for rope. Bearing coils of braided leather, we worked toward the bull from 3 sides. The treadmill imitated slippery mud beneath my feet while the bodysuit tickled nerves so that I felt hip-deep in slimy water. Electronically stirred receptors in my nose smelled the creature's blood and defiance above the rank swamp stench. It was hard work floundering toward our prey, harder and more varied than lifting weights in a gym, and more terrifying.
The buffalo shifted left and right, bellowing and threatening with its horns. Ever since Gaia bought that extra memory, everything had seemed more vivid, including this beast's hot zeal to survive. "Watch out!" Ankle cried out as it lunged. I swerved and felt a wall of fur and muscle glance off my shoulder, rushing through space I'd just occupied. Teetering in the mud, I glimpsed a snaking lasso chase the old bull landing around its neck. "Got him!" Longstick cried. "My turn!" called a higher voice. Ankle cast her lariat, only to fall short as the angry beast thrashed aside. "Wait!" I cried when she plunged after it. Too late, I watched the girl vanish beneath the frothy, scummy surface. "Ankle!" Suddenly, I was too busy dodging to worry about my young aide. Sharp horns flashed viciously. While I knew the computer wouldn't kill me, other slip-ups in the gym had left me bruised for weeks. "She's only a program," I told myself, backpedaling from a roaring, shaggy face the size of a small pickup. "Programs can take care of themselves."
"Yee-yee-yep!"
The cry coincided with a sudden change in the creature's bellows. It whirled, and I blinked in astonishment. The young hunter Ankle had clambered on its back. Dripping water and marsh reeds, she held tightly to its mane while the bull snorted, wild-eyed and convulsing. Then she slipped her noose over its shaggy head. Others joined her exultant shout as ropes suddenly pulled taut from three directions. Resignation seemed to settle over the animal. Slumping in defeat, it let itself be drawn several yards toward dry land. Then in one last desperate heave, it reared on its hind legs. Ankle flew off, arms whirling to splash near the bull's stomping hooves. With a shout, I dove toward her. Or tried to. Swimming is one thing today's virtuality tech can't handle. No way to fake buoyancy, so the machine won't let you try. The bodysuit stiffened, keeping me on my feet. It did let me flounder forward, though, evading the thrashing horns while flailing underwater in search of my apprentice. Frantic seconds passed, and finally I felt the touch of a slim arm. A small hand closed vice-like around my wrist as I yanked back hard, just as the buffalo pitched over, toppling with a mighty splash where Ankle had lain. We made it ashore downstream from where the tribe quickly commenced the frenetic ritual of butchery. In olden times, a kill like this came at best once a month, so the hunters sang their joy to the spirits of water, earth, and sky. But the artful ceremony was wasted on me as I slogged uphill, feeling pressure leave my cramping legs exactly like water slipping aside. The weight in my arms seemed all too real as I lowered Ankle to a patch of grass. This was an awful lot of trouble to go to just for a piece of software. I might have rationalized that good persona programs are expensive, but the thought didn't cross my mind as I hurriedly checked Ankle's breathing. Pale, mud-grimed from crown to toe, she gave two sudden wheezing coughs, then revealed twin flashes of abalone blue as her eyes popped open. Ankle gasped a sudden stricken sob and threw both arms around my neck. "Urk," I answered. Never before had my togs yanked me down so into such a flood of sensations. Pain lanced my palms from impacting pebbles. Sunlight spread heat across my mud-splattered back. Then there was the press of her warm body clinging beneath mine, much more cushiony in places than I had imagined. Soon I realized Ankle no longer clung to me for comfort. She was moving, breathing in ways having little to do with reassurance. I grunted surprise for a second time and reached up to pry loose her arms. "Stop simulation," I shouted. My last glimpse before yanking off the helmet was of Ankle lying there, muddy all over, wiry strong and hunter attired, yet suddenly utterly female, gazing at me both worshipful and willing. She was only software, bits of illusion on a silicon chip. Besides, I barely knew her. She was already the second most desirable woman I had ever known. Now get this. I love my wife. I always figured myself one of those lucky bastards whose woman understands him inside and out, and despite that thinks the world of him. So I figured, there's got to be a mistake here. Trembling, I peeled off my sweaty bodysuit and stumbled into the shower, wondering, how am I going to explain this to Gaia? Then, while soaping myself, I thought, what's to explain? I didn't do anything. Rinsing, I pondered. And if I had, would it have been adultery or an exotic form of masturbation? I recall how Mom tacitly approved of Dad's small collection of mildly erotic art. She wasn't threatened by a good man's private fantasies, nor did Gaia ever seem to consider my right-hand a rival. Sometimes she would dial up my electronic Playboy subscription for the articles. Still, if a certain amount of healthy, visually stimulated autoeroticism was okay, I also knew it would hurt her terribly if I had a real-life affair. So, what had nearly taken place in my VR gym? The experience seemed to fall somewhere between boffing a co-ed and an encounter with an inflatable doll. Too bad they never produced that sci-fi gimmick, a direct computer-mind interface. Then I might have dismissed any sim adventure as purely mental. But so much of what we are and do is tied up in our bodies, the nerves, hormones, and muscles. For a vivid experience, you must take your meat along. With flesh taking part, virtuality can mimic any surface. I've crawled across grass and tide pools and steaming sands while stalking prey. But simulating a woman? High-tech marches on, but this is ridiculous, I laughed, drying under a blast of warm air, then put on a terry cloth robe and went out to tell Gaia everything. I had last seen my wife in the nursery where she had been humming while sorting things for the baby and cheerfully wishing me a good hunt. Gaia wasn't there, but I felt a warm glow just looking around the little room, its walls decorated with hologram mobiles and floating planets. I had installed most of the nursery equipment myself, including the bottom baster with its simmering vat of liquid diaper. The flotation crib would be programmed to mimic my wife's heartbeat and other rhythms, comforting baby's first weeks with sensations familiar from the womb. This was where my life was anchored, I thought, not in some make-believe hunting band that feminismo psychologists thought every modern man required. My family. For all its pollution, crowds, and exhaustion, the real world was where you lived real life. Gaia? I asked, searching in the living room. You'll never guess what happened. She wasn't there either. I tried the kitchen, throbbing with busy, scrabbling sounds of captive insects. Still no sign of her. Funny, I thought. She hadn't said anything about another Natu birth class tonight. Computer, did my wife leave a message where she was going? The control voice answered. Your wife hasn't left the apartment. She is in her virtuality room. Ah, of course, her turn. Must have gone in while I showered. I sat on the couch gingerly, still feeling tremors from this evening's high-stress workout. I picked up the remote control and scanned tonight's cable listings. Besides the normal 1,000 channels of infotainment, there were amateur vids, pub forums, hobby and spec interest lines, two-way chat shows, and Uncle Fred showing slides of his blimp ride to Everest, the usual stuff. I fell back on dialing a good book from the library, and actually stared at the first page of Robinson Crusoe for about 10 minutes before pounding the cushion beside me. Hell! I told myself I was getting up to fetch a drink, then go to the can, then to look in the closet for my tennis shoes. Maybe I'd go outside for an old-fashioned walk. I found the sneakers where I'd left them, near the crack in the closet wall. Leaning close, I heard soft sounds coming from the room next door, my wife's private sanctum. They weren't sounds of conversation, but exertion, heavy breathing. Well, gatherers also used to work hard, netting fish, cutting wild grain. I knew I was rationalizing as I brought my eye to the crack. Wearing helmet and bodysuit, Gaia squatted much as the last time I had seen her in this place, hands outstretched and down before her, as if grasping something. Underneath, the treadmill floor mimicked an oblong hummock which she straddled while strenuously rocking back and forth. Whatever she was doing in her private world, it apparently involved a lot of effort, for her head rocked back and I heard her moan aloud. I knew that sound. I looked again at the shape beneath her and saw that it recreated no patch of ground, no fallen log. Even without goggles for seeing, earphones for hearing, or gloves for touching, I could tell the outline of a man. I needed those sneakers after all. I left at once and took a walk along the sky bridges lacing the gray metropolis at the 40-story level, overlooking the maze of transport tubes and vibrating machinery that keeps the city alive. Looking up past the towering canyon walls of Chi-Town, I could see no stars, just a hazy glow diffused by pollutant haze. Late at night, I should have been grateful for the countless public safety cameras peering from each lamppost, but they only made me feel conspicuous, supervised. On the Veldt, you don't fear being victimized by a million strangers. 20,000 years ago, there were no strangers. All you needed was your tribe. I ducked into a bar. The beer was excellent, the atmosphere depressing. Other men sat nursing drinks, scrupulously avoiding eye contact with those around them. A wire-o in the corner kept dropping quarters into a stim-zap machine, then sticking his head under the hood for direct jolts of electric pleasure. His sighs were sterile, emotionless. Gaia's had been throaty, lusty. Now I knew where she had learned that provocative, swaying motion, the one she'd used the last few times we made love. Apparently, she had a tutor, a good one. One I would never meet, let alone get to punch in the face. Fair is fair, I thought. Hadn't I already rationalized my own encounter with sex by simulation before finding out that Gaia was doing it first? If it fell into the category of masturbation for me and not infidelity, then why not her? That's different, part of me replied. But hard as I tried, I couldn't see how. My rival was a phantom, no threat in real terms. He could never impregnate Gaia, or give her a disease, or boast of cuckolding me to my business partners, or ever take her away from me. What it really came down to was the mental image, provoking jealousy at a deep gut level. Jealousy based on ancient drives a civilized man should be able to overcome. I was no longer sure I wanted to be a civilized man. No, I didn't get roaring drunk or provoke a fight with the big guy two stools down. I thought about it, but what the hell? By now, I was much too skilled at killing to trust myself in a friendly brawl out in the real world. Anyway, my neighbor also looked like he worked out. Maybe for exercise, he took scalps with Cochise or rode with a VR Genghis Khan. Under our gray urban disguises, we can all be dangerous mysteries. I paid up and left. Gaia was dozing on the couch when I got back, or pretending to be. She seemed relieved to have me home, and I tried not to show my inner turmoil. I turned on the TV wall, and she, sensing it wiser, went to bed. Half an hour later, I slipped into my bodysuit and re-entered my private world. Weeks passed. Gaia grew larger. We spoke little. My consulting firm finally won the Tyco Tech account, worth millions. I rushed home and celebrated with Ankle by first killing a lion, then making love by a cool bend in the river. We lay together listening to locusts and the wind in the swaying branches while a dry heat seemed to suck all the dank, fetid odors of the office out of my skin. Tension at work had left knots up and down my spine, which Ankle worked out with her strong hands. She listened quietly to my recitation of setbacks and victories in the corporate world, clearly understanding none of it. That didn't matter. My VR people knew and accepted that their chief spent most of his time far away in the land of gods. In a way, Ankle was the perfect, uncritical sounding board. If only it had been that simple dealing with the hanging, unspoken tension between me and Gaia. Ankle would have listened to that too, but what was there to say? The whole thing was preposterous and my fault. Why should it bother me what my wife did in fantasy play? It did bother me. It was starting to split us apart. I want to show you something, Ankle announced, picking up her clothes and evading my grasp. Come, she urged. Longstick can send some boys for the lion. There is something nearby you must see. I shrugged into my tunic. What is it? She only smiled and motioned for me to follow. Still wrestling to lace my moccasins, I tried to keep up as she led me toward a forested rise. It lay in the direction of camp, the fictitious home base I had never seen during all of my workouts with small groups of hunters. It would have taken so much computing power to process a full tribe that it simply never occurred to me to journey in this direction. We reached the top of the rise and soon picked up faint sounds, human voices talking and laughing. We approached stealthily, crawling the last few meters to peer over a steep bluff. There we saw, a couple of hundred meters downslope, a small gathering of people clustered around an oak tree. They were using tall poles to bat away at an object high in the branches. Occasionally, one of them dropped her pole and hopped about, swatting at the air while others laughed. Gatherers, I realized, going after a beehive. This was my first glimpse of the other half of my tribe. Calmly, I noted that many were accompanied by children, and that one of the unaccompanied ones was decidedly pregnant. My breath suddenly caught as I recognized the rotund, laughing figure. All this time, Gaia and I had played in our own pretend Neolithic worlds, and never guessed they were different parts of the same tribe. It hadn't started out that way. We had bought our original program separately. But in retrospect, it seemed an obvious thing for the computer to do, to save memory space by pooling our adventures in the same metaphorical landscape. "It affects us," Ankle said. "Who?" "Your folk." She motioned toward the gatherers, slapped her own chest, and waved toward the east where the hunting parties roamed. "It hurts us." "What hurts you?" I asked, perplexed, distracted.
"The break. The pain between you two."
I was too confused, too curious about this new turn of events to follow what she was saying. I peered at the figures below and saw two men among the women down there helping to steal honey. Just as some women could be hunters, certain males might choose the rites and rhythms of gathering. Probably one of them was my rival, Gaia's synthetic paramour. Suddenly it seemed important to get closer. But as I made ready, Ankle stopped me.
"You cannot," she said.
"What do you mean?"
"Certain charms are needed to unite us, unite the tribe."
"Charms?" She nodded.
"From the land of gods."
After a pause, "Oh, I get it." She meant more memory, much more. Until recently, I had hunted with just one companion, then 10 or so. Joining the two simulated worlds depicting several score personified characters would take more power than our house console possessed. But that was no problem. I had a big raise coming. I could go right out and buy the chips on credit. My fist clenched in anticipation. By this time tomorrow, I'd get a much closer look at the bastard who... Suddenly, the laughter below broke under a single warbling cry. One of the women dropped her pole and doubled over in agony, clutching her swollen abdomen. I didn't stop to think. With a bellow, I came to my feet, running downhill toward the petite form writhing amid a cluster of anxious women. "Gaia!" I cried, frustrated that the ground grew tarry with each step. The gatherers, too, seemed to blur around the edges as I neared, one heavy step at a time. The earth trembled, and Ankle clutched my arm.
"Not that way," she screamed, cringing as I whirled in anger. "Oh, Chief, you must go," she slapped the side of her head, then pointed to mine. "Go back!"
Damn the realism of it all. Cursing, I tore off the helmet, gashing my cheek. The bodysuit still formed a matrix of otherworld sensations, hot savanna wind and gritty moccasins. But abruptly, my eyes saw a tiny off-white chamber, its coarse floor mimicking a steep hillside. Sense conflict made me sway in confusion as I dove for the door. "I'm coming, Gaia," I cried, stumbling in the hallway, in haste to reach my wife. They're making a big deal out of it. I've been interviewed. There is even talk of reviving childbirth classes for husbands. But it's all silly, of course. Any other man would have done the same in a crisis. I have my wife and son. What else matters? Tommy thrives as his stim crib eases him from synthetic womb sounds into the gaudy greater world. He will grow up here in Chi-Town, and on Mars, and in an Indian village, and in ancient Greece, and a Neolithic clan. He'll run through forests to know what we've lost. As a teenager, he'll fulfill fantasies lads of my time could but imagine. And if he gets a big head from being a prince in a dozen virtualities, well, he can still get parental correction in the outer world. Even his generation will learn to tell what's real. Reality is what hurts when you take the suit off. As for Gaia and me, we found ways to assuage my male pride once our tribes united. Each of us plays with Personi now and then. Who could resist? But always we come home to each other. Virtuality is fun. It's good to be the chief. But nothing matches the sweetness of her skin, her breath, or the wonderful unpredictability of her real mind. My blood pressure is low, my arteries are squeaky clean, and muscles wiry strong. I stay a little hungry like my ancestors, and may live past 100. In a cramped world of 12 billion souls, I can run for hours seeing no one but gazelles or a lonely hawk. Lions know to give me a wide berth. Give me time. I'm even learning to like termites.